It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and welcome to the broadcast. I'm Brennan Dixon. Going after guns.
I don't need to wait another minute, let alone an hour, to take common sense steps that will save the lives in the future.
That's our top story at noon. The Biden administration has unveiled a series of executive actions aimed at addressing gun violence. CBS's Stephen Portnoy reports.
He'd say the executive order targets ghost guns, which enthusiasts with the proper know-how and the right equipment can assemble at home without undergoing background checks. The order will also take aim at braces that can stabilize the arm of a person firing a semi-automatic pistol. The White House argues those devices can effectively turn those pistols into short-barreled rifles, which are subject to tighter federal controls.
The president detailed a total of six actions yesterday that he's signing today. However, his directives face an uphill climb in Congress.
I'm not interested in taking away the Second Amendment rights of any American.
Biden also nominated David Chipman to be director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives.
He's a fierce gun control advocate, currently serves as a senior advisor to Gabby Giffords' group, the former congresswoman who was shot in 2011. Chipman spent decades as an ATF federal agent. His first challenge, though, as you note, is getting confirmed by Congress. There has not been a permanent ATF director now in 6 years, and he's going to face strong opposition, especially from Republican lawmakers, from among other things, his past support of an assault weapons ban.
Meanwhile, five people are dead, including two kids, and one person is seriously injured in a mass shooting in Rock Hill, South Carolina.
Deputies say they found a man and a woman and their two grandchildren, one age 9, one age 5, shot dead inside the home. A man who was doing work on the house was also found dead outside. Another victim was taken to the hospital. The suspect, we're told, was found down the street.
That happened Wednesday afternoon. York County Sheriff's spokesman Trent Ferris.
This is a very tragic, tragic situation.
The grandfather was a prominent doctor in the community. Cops would not say if the suspect was alive. Same evidence, very different views from the defense and prosecution in the Derek Chauvin trial. Correspondent Jamie Yukas.
Prosecutors tried to deflate the defense's argument that George Floyd's drug use caused his death. The defense played video of Floyd resisting police for James Ryerson, the lead investigator in the case.
Did it appear that Mr. Floyd said, "I ate too many drugs"?
Yes, it did.
But prosecutors replayed the video from an earlier point.
Are you able to tell what Mr. Floyd is saying there?
Yes, I believe Mr. Floyd was saying, "I ain't doing no drugs."
Day 9 of the trial is underway right now with more witnesses testifying. An unsafe speed, the cause of the car crash that left golfing great Tiger Woods seriously injured. That according to L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva.
The primary causal factor for this traffic collision was driving at a speed unsafe for the road conditions and the inability to negotiate the curve of the roadway.
Villanueva says Tiger was driving between 84 and 87 miles per hour in a 45 mile per hour zone at the time of the February 23rd accident. There was no signs of impairment or distracted driving, and no charges or citations will be issued against Woods. Tiger says he has no recollection of the wreck, and he's grateful for the support and help. The UK variant of coronavirus, now the most common strain circulating in the U.S. The more transmissible variant is causing spikes in COVID cases across the country and leaving nurses wondering,
will we catch a break from this? Do we really need to go into a fourth wave?
CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky says the strain is especially transmissible among younger Americans. She said new outbreaks have been tied to youth sports and daycare centers and is encouraging states with rising caseloads to curtail or suspend youth sports activities to slow the spread of the virus.
In areas of substantial or high community transmission, CDC guidance specifically suggests refraining from youth sports that are not outside and cannot be conducted at least 6 feet apart.
White House Coronavirus Task Force member Andy Slavitt.
If we, of all of us, do our part, we could help save lives.
The U.S. leads the world with nearly 31 million confirmed cases and more than 559,000 confirmed deaths. Arkansas lawmakers have made the state the first to ban sex change operations for transgender youth, enacting the ban over the governor's objections.
The Republican-controlled House and Senate voting to override Republican Asa Hutchinson's veto of the measure, which prohibits doctors from providing hormone treatment, puberty blockers, or surgery to anyone under 18 years old.
Rich Thomason reporting. Washington State is allowing prisoners to vote once they get out. The governor signed a bill yesterday saying he was expanding access to democracy. It lets convicted felons make their voice heard, even if they're still being supervised. And Adidas is coming out with Lego shoes. 144 Lego bricks are included with the footwear.
You're putting Lego pieces in the sides to create the Adidas stripes on the side. I don't know who the market is for this one. I was debating this with your producer. It could be teenagers. It could be younger as well.
They'll cost you, too. The Ultra Boost Lego sneakers are $200 on the Adidas site. Also ahead on the Noon Report, more controversy for Governor Cuomo, the son of a prominent politician running for New York governor, and a Commonwealth couple celebrating a major milestone. First, a quick peek at the forecast from meteorologist Kevin Williams.
Well, good afternoon to all. Just a beautiful day underway across our region from the Niagara Frontier to the Poconos and everywhere in between. There are some changes coming, though, for tomorrow and the weekend as well. Coming up in your forecast, we'll see in 10 minutes.
All right, thanks, Kevin. Here's what's happening across New York and Pennsylvania. An aide who's accused New York Governor Andrew Cuomo of groping her at his official residence says it was a frightening physical encounter. In her first public interview, she told the Times Union of Albany that Cuomo slammed a door and said, quote, "I don't care," when she warned someone might see what he was doing. The governor's lawyer denied the allegations, but it comes as the Cuomo administration reportedly did track COVID deaths in nursing homes, despite saying otherwise. Fox News' Jackie Ibanez was able to obtain
a Department of Health document requiring nursing homes as of April 19th of last year to record and submit the number of residents who died of COVID-19 each day in their facility. Yet despite that request, state officials claiming the deaths could not be verified, and thousands were later excluded from a July report on COVID in the state's nursing homes. This as the governor distances himself from allegations of a VIP list for COVID testing, including his own brother, Chris Cuomo.
Cuomo denied those allegations yesterday.
I was not involved in the testing program to that intimate level. People who I would meet with, I was aware they were being tested.
This as the governor continues to face calls to resign. Meantime, a familiar name may be running for his job. Andrew Giuliani, the son of former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, says he's, quote, heavily considering running for governor of New York. He told the Washington Examiner on Wednesday, I quote, plan to run. WETM's Jordan Norcus says Giuliani
currently works as an analyst for Newsmax. He says he believes he has the best chance to win and take the state back. Andrew Giuliani has never held elected office, and New York has not elected a Republican statewide office since George Pataki won a third term as governor in 2002.
The 35-year-old recently worked as a top aide for Trump during his presidency. Southern Tier Congressman Tom Reed is no longer the co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus that he helped found in 2017. The bipartisan group, which seeks to put politics aside and find common sense solutions, has grown to 58 members, split evenly among the two parties. Reed and New Jersey Democrat Josh Gottheimer had been its only two chairs. That changed last night as Pennsylvania Congressman Brian Fitzpatrick was elected as the caucus's GOP chair. Reed stepped down after a former lobbyist last month accused him of making unwanted sexual advances. The Pennsylvania House has passed a bill that members say will hold people accountable for helping others take their own lives. The measure would increase sentences for people who encourage a minor or someone with an intellectual disability to die by suicide. It now heads to the state Senate, where it stalled last year. The State University of New York, which has nearly 1.3 million students on dozens of campuses, will not require mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations this fall. This after Cornell University and Ithaca College said Wednesday they will require vaccination to attend in-person classes. SUNY Chancellor Dr. Jim Malatra says students on campus have done a great job social distancing and wearing masks, and he doesn't feel the need to force a vaccine to come to class.
They're getting tested.
masking and other things. Our positivity rate on our campuses is below 0.5%, which is much lower than the statewide average. They're doing everything right.
That comes on the heels of a study that 18 to 24-year-olds are the least likely demographic to get a vaccine. Just 31% willingly choose to go for the shot. Many have argued that personal health decisions should never be mandated by a government agency or a school. Meanwhile, fans will not be allowed in the stands for sporting events at several SUNY schools. The SUNY Athletic Conference says it'll finish the spring without spectators. Buffalo State, Fredonia, Brockport, and Geneseo all play in that league. The leaders of Pennsylvania's state university system may see consolidation of some schools as the best road forward, but faculty members clearly are not convinced.
A poll released on Wednesday by the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Faculties found nearly 70% of faculty members who teach at one of the universities slated for consolidation do not support the move. Less than 8% of faculty respondents supported it. The Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education has proposed merging some institutions as a remedy for the state's financial woes. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Theaters in the Keystone State are confused by new COVID-19 guidelines that went into effect this week. Those rules allow indoor venues to operate at 75% capacity. Indoor events, however, are limited to 25%. The Majestic Theater in Schuylkill County says it feels caught in the middle.
You kind of start to lose hope. Like, is it ever going to end?
The theater in downtown Pottsville has been quiet this past year. And the question remains, are theaters 75% or 25%? They have no idea where they fall under the new rule.
I honestly don't know what the right answer is. I don't know what fits us. I did reach out and tried to get an answer, and I just kept getting this stock reply.
Pennsylvania's largest public pension system is dealing with a federal investigation. There's no word on the nature of the inquiry, but the disclosures come less than 2 weeks after the system said it's investigating a consultant's calculation about the fund's investment performance that is wrong. We're learning more about New York State's freshly passed $212 billion budget. It includes a 5% cap on profits for nursing homes and demands a large percentage of revenues be dedicated to resident care and staffing. State Senator Tom O'Meara tells WETM he's not a fan.
Rather than coming up with some sort of workable staffing ratio, which has been sought for in the industry for a long time, they came up with this convoluted method of just telling owners of facilities how much percentages of their revenues they have to spend in what areas.
The changes come on the heels of a recent bill repealing blanket legal protections given to healthcare facilities dealing with COVID patients. The spending plan also supports Governor Cuomo's $311 billion infrastructure plan that's expected to create thousands of jobs for New Yorkers. But State Comptroller Democrat Tom DiNapoli is concerned about the new taxes on the wealthiest New Yorkers and corporations.
He says the tax hikes will make high earners downstate the highest tax people in the nation. DiNapoli also warned against increased spending. He says it's important that spending not grow to unsustainable levels.
News 4's Jackie Walker reporting. No restaurant relief. Governor Cuomo is keeping a restriction aimed at eateries in place. Last night, the governor renewed an executive order that forces people to buy food when they go out for a drink. The rule has been on the books since July 2020. A year in front of screens. What is it doing to your eyes? Experts believe it may start to cause an increase in nearsightedness. Here's a tip from a top eye doc in Pennsylvania.
There's something called the 20/20/20 rule that is kind of popular, where about every 20 minutes you should stop what you're doing and try to look either out a window or down a hallway and count to 20. So that's the 20 seconds, and try to stare 20 feet away. So that really helps. It just relaxes your muscles and it allows those eyes to take a break and focus on a different distance.
And marking a major marriage anniversary, family and friends gathered in Danville, PA to celebrate Leon and Rosemary Krasinski's 70th wedding anniversary yesterday.
My cousin, he was after her.
but I ended up with her.
The couple from Shamokin got married in 1951 and has 4 kids, 9 grandkids, and 9 great-grandchildren.
They've been great role models. They've taught us, you know, the importance of faith and family. They're very giving, very sharing so much of their lives with not only their family, but other people.
The Krasinskis say after all these years, there are a few secrets to a healthy marriage.
Forgive and forget.
And if you're raising children, make sure to get their cod liver oil every morning.
That's one way to make a marriage last. Well, congrats to those two lovebirds for 7 decades together. Time next for the 2-minute drill in sports with Sonny.
Thank you, Brandon. The chase for the green jacket began today at Augusta National. First round play is underway right now. Americans Michael Thompson and Hudson Swafford were the first to go off at 8 this morning. Dustin Johnson won the 2020 Masters back in November. Major League Baseball Chance Sisko singled in the winning run in the 11th. The Orioles topped the Yankees 4-3 in the Bronx. The Orioles have won 4 of 6 to begin the season. Manager Brandon Hyde.
Credit goes to our guys for battling, staying with it. Our bullpen really did a great job. A lot of good things on the mound tonight for us.
The Yankees have split their first 6 games. In Philadelphia, a big 4-run first inning helped the Phillies bomb the Mets 8-2. The Phillies are 5-1 on the year, but don't make too much of it, says Joe Girardi.
Well, I think that it just says we had a good homestand and we need to continue to play well. And we get an off day and we get to rest some guys, which I think is really important, but it just said we had a good homestand and let's go play well on the road.
And the Rangers celebrating their first series win after beating the Blue Jays 2-1 in Arlington. Kevin Durant finally back with the Nets after missing 23 games. He returned to score 17 points in just 19 minutes. The Nets crushed the Pelicans 139-111. Durant 5-for-5 from the floor, 5-for-5 from the free throw line.
Dive right into the action. I mean, the game was already fast paced already. So from watching it from the bench, I knew exactly how I needed to approach it. So, but it was pretty cool coming off the bench. I can't lie. But it was also good to play in front of the fans.
Elsewhere, the Knicks fell to the Boston Celtics 101-99. On the ice, the Maple Leafs over Montreal 3-2. And Sean Miller's out as men's basketball coach at the University of Arizona. The Wildcats announced Miller's departure Wednesday after 12 seasons. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Delphiette.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come, focusing in on firearms. New developments in the scandals involving Governor Cuomo, and leave it to kids to create change.
Some think that it's time for Christians to cut a deal on the Equality Act. Not only would this be a mistake, it'd be a failure to love our neighbor. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. The most recent incarnation of the Equality Act is also the most radical version that we've seen. This term, the Equality Act passed the House. Though I think it's unlikely at this point, a 50-50 tie in the Senate broken by a Democratic White House means that the Equality Act could be a live option. Last year, it simply wasn't. And who knows what the next round of midterms could do to these numbers. Now, in light of the very real threat posed by the Equality Act, a number of Christians have offered compromise solutions, most notably the Fairness for All Act. Though FFA carves out exemptions for churches and certain religious organizations, it's not clear which ones would get those exemptions. And this would not protect the religious freedoms of Christian citizens who are medical professionals, business owners, bakers, florists, photographers, and so on. These attempts to legislatively preserve whatever religious freedoms we can, while well-intentioned, are actually premature attempts at deal-making. Rather than carving out a place for Christians in an increasingly hostile culture, this appeasement shrinks the space available to believers both now and in the future. There are at least 2 reasons to not only oppose the Equality Act, but any attempt to compromise in its direction. First, the Equality Act, even in compromise form, says what is not true about the human person. Specifically, the Equality Act suggests that when it comes to human beings, questions of sexual and gender identity are equivalent to categories of race and ethnicity. In other words, something largely determined by behavioral choice and personal expression is treated as an essential characteristic of a human person. Though in the past, LGB advocates might have used the born this way argument to explain sexual identity, that argument does not serve the new letter, the T, in the acronym, and therefore it's been largely abandoned. Second, by hijacking the history and the categories of the civil rights movement, the Equality Act says things that are not true about the plight of people who identify as LGBT. The Civil Rights Act ensured that African Americans could participate in civil society when, at times, they could not. Decades ago, for example, an African American family couldn't take a cross-country trip since so many hotels and gas stations and restaurants might refuse to serve them. Effectively, an entire segment of the population was excluded from society. Now, this is not the case for LGBT people. When Jack Phillips refused to bake a cake celebrating a same-sex marriage in a state that, by the way, at the time did not even recognize same-sex marriage, dozens of bakeries nearby would have gladly taken the business. To compare, the refusal to participate in a same-sex marriage or a gender-affirming surgery with the Jim Crow South is just obviously false given the wide availability of services in any of these arenas. And that brings up the third way in which attempts to compromise with the Equality Act fail. Compromise solutions wish to protect ministers and Christian institutions from being forced to comply with the government's point of view. Everyone else is left fully unprotected. As Alexander Solzhenitsyn wrote decades ago, we don't have to join every protest. We don't have to hold every sign. At the very least, however, we must not say what is not true. Even for a good cause, we cannot lend voices in support of our culture's falsehoods about what it means to be human. And we should tell our religious and political leaders the same thing. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
Let's get a check of your full forecast now from Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here's your Family Life regional weather forecast for this afternoon. Golden sunshine and warm. High temperatures in the 70s to near 80, near record territory for some. But it'll be much cooler near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario, 40s and 50s there. That's where the temperatures will drop to. For tonight, after a nice evening, it clouds up. Could be a late night shower near Lake Erie. Low temperatures, mid-40s to the mid-50s. Tomorrow, be less warm, we'll say. Still well above normal temperature-wise. Variable clouds, a couple showers, high in the 60s. And then we're back in the 70s with a fair amount of sunshine on Saturday.
Okay, Kevin, thank you very much. Today, President Biden unveiling 6 executive actions aimed at gun control. He began speaking from the Rose Garden around 11:45 this morning to address the issue. Tracy Putz has more.
Directing the Justice Department to restrict homemade weapons that are referred to as ghost guns and stabilizing braces that can turn pistols into rifles. He'll also ask the Justice Department to resume firearms tracking that they haven't done in more than 20 years. And draft laws that states can use, so-called red flag laws for family members and police, to go to a judge and withhold weapons from people who are in crisis.
The DOJ plans to roll out the proposed ghost gun rules within the next 30 days, but Republicans in Congress are opposed to the president going after guns.
And every time there's a shooting, we play this ridiculous theater where this committee gets together and proposes a bunch of laws that would do nothing to stop these murders.
Mr. Biden also announced David Chipman, a former federal agent and, quote, fierce gun control advocate, as his nominee to be director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. If confirmed, Chipman would be the agency's first permanent director since 2015. Day 9 of Derek Chauvin's murder trial is underway. Yesterday, the prosecution brought LAPD Sergeant Jody Stigger to testify that the former Minneapolis cop placing his knee on George Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes was excessive.
The pressure that was being caused by the body weight could cause positional asphyxia, which could cause death.
The defense doubling down on Floyd's drug use, with tablets being found in Floyd's car.
The tablets contained methamphetamine and fentanyl.
Floyd's brother Roddy says it's been tough having to constantly relive George's death.
And just try to muster that same strength up and just get through it.
Chauvin is charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter in Floyd's death. A Department of Health document reportedly shows that the Cuomo administration required nursing homes as of April 19th of 2020 to record and submit the number of residents who died of COVID-19 each day in their facility. Despite that request, state officials claimed the deaths could not be verified. Fox News' Jackie Ibanez.
Meanwhile, one of his accusers detailing her allegations allegations of being groped at the governor's mansion. In an interview with the Albany Times Union, the unnamed former Cuomo staffer claiming she was requested by name, and then when she arrived, the governor slammed a door and began touching her, saying, quote, "It was almost like I felt like a piece of garbage to him. I felt degraded." Cuomo's attorney responding in a statement saying, in part, Cuomo has repeatedly made clear that he never made inappropriate advances or inappropriately touched anybody.
This as the governor continues to face calls to resign as reports of Andrew Giuliani, Rudy Giuliani's son, may be considering a gubernatorial run. The 35-year-old, who's never held public office, says he would run as a Republican. And beloved animal expert Jack Hanna is retiring from public life due to dementia.
One last thing, the whiskers.
Yeah.
Why do you think he has long whiskers?
Because so people think they're tusks.
No. That's a warthog.
His family says Jack's condition has, quote, progressed much faster in the last few months than any of us could have anticipated. Friends say he'll leave behind a lasting legacy.
There's an old saying that says, in the end, we protect what we love what we understand, and we understand what we're taught. Jack is a masterful teacher.
Jungle Jack Hanna and his animals became a staple on late night and daytime TV thanks to his many appearances on shows like The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson, Late Night with David Letterman, and Today. LGBT advocates aim to pull federal funds from Christian colleges based on religious exemptions.
This is Faith Under Fire. Each Thursday on Family Life, we give voice to religious battlegrounds in this nation. I'm your host, Tracy Lynn. With us today, constitutional scholar Douglas Laycock, professor of law at the University of Virginia. So the federal funding granted to Christian colleges has come under scrutiny from LGBT advocates. Douglas, in a nutshell, do you know what sort of federal funding these religious schools typically receive?
Well, it varies a lot by the type of school, but except for a couple of schools that refuse all federal money, all colleges and universities get student financial aid money from the federal government. The bigger universities with research programs, places like Baylor and Notre Dame and Brigham Young, get research grants for specific projects. There are probably some other kinds of federal money, but those are the two biggies, research money and student financial aid.
And so 33 current or former mostly Christian college students brought a suit last week against the Department of Education in an effort to do away with the exemption for religious schools when it comes to sexual orientation and gender identity. As a longtime student of our Constitution, do you agree that these exemptions are unconstitutional?
No. These 33 students and lots of people who sympathize with them view every religious exemption just as a form of discrimination against LGBTQ students. It's not that at all. It's a protection for a different right that is equally important, that is explicitly in the Constitution, and that's the right to religious liberty. And we can protect gay students and religious people and religious institutions in this country if we care to try. But there are too many people on both sides who don't care to try. Too many conservative believers want to deny most rights to LGBTQ, and way too many on the LGBTQ side who want to deny any rights to religious conscience objectors. And this lawsuit is a manifestation of that. You can't have any exemptions. Everybody has to see the world the same way we do.
Great point, Douglas. Do you think that this concerted effort by the Religious Exemption Accountability Project now is sort of a backup plan in case the LGBT community doesn't get all it seeks in the Equality Act, which is currently being debated in the U.S. Senate?
That's more than a backup plan. The Equality Act would add gay rights and gender identity to all the statutes that prohibit discrimination. And it would repeal all statutory religious liberty defenses, like the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It has no religious exemptions in it. So the Equality Act is very one-sided and goes very far. But it would not protect the LGBTQ students from religious exemptions found by the courts directly under the Free Exercise Clause. So this lawsuit is aimed at both categories. It's aimed at holding unconstitutional the existing Title IX exemptions, but also aimed at establishing that the Constitution itself precludes any kind of religious exemption. So that goes much further than the Equality Act. They would want this lawsuit even if they get the Equality Act.
So if the 33 plaintiffs win their case, what type of ripple effect could this have on Christian colleges in the future?
Well, if they win, it would be the end of all educational exemptions in the gay rights and gender identity context. And every school would have to decide whether to comply or give up all its federal money.
So,
but there wouldn't be an in-between.
So there are some schools, I think Hillsdale College, for example, probably doesn't accept any federal funding. And so they would be able to continue to hold to their religious principles.
Correct.
And so that's what these other schools might end up doing if this case is won by those 33 plaintiffs. Douglas, this class action suit is not the first attempt to dismantle the religious exemption granted to religious colleges. What do you think our listeners need to know about attempts like this to religious liberty?
Well, this case may have some success in the lower courts. I don't think it's a winner in the Supreme Court, at least as currently composed. They may or may not provide religious exemptions under the Constitution, but they're certainly not going to hold that religious exemptions are unconstitutional. That's not going to happen. I think there's a group of religious colleges trying to intervene in this case, and that's important because we don't know how vigorously the Biden administration will defend it. In the longer run, there's another bill competing with the Equality Act. It's the Fairness for All Act, which would add gay rights to pretty much every federal discrimination statute, but also provide religious exemptions. It really is a compromise that protects both sides. And I think people, both religious believers and religious institutions, need to be doing more to support the Fairness for All Act and encourage their representatives in Congress to compromise and protect both sides rather than trying to give a complete win to one side and crush the other side.
That's University of Virginia Professor Douglas Laycock. I'm Tracy Lynn, Family Life News.
Faith Under Fire airs Thursdays during the Noon Report or online anytime at familylife.org/news.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast for this afternoon. Golden sunshine and warm. High temperatures in the 70s to near 80, near record territory for some. But it'll be much cooler near the shores of Lake Erie in Ontario, 40s and 50s there. That's where the temperatures will drop to. For tonight, after a nice evening, it clouds up. Could be a late-night shower near Lake Erie. Low temperatures, mid-40s to the mid-50s. Tomorrow, be less warm, we'll say. Still well above normal temperature-wise. Variable clouds, couple showers, high in the 60s. And then we're back in the 70s with a fair amount of sunshine on Saturday.
Finally at noon, the power of persuasion. An adorable first grader asked Old Navy to make their blue jeans for girls with real pockets. Listen to what happened.
Cameron Gardner of Arkansas says pockets are important.
I use my pockets to keep my hands warm.
So she decided to write Old Navy with her noble complaint to see what would happen.
I didn't think they were going to write me back because it took them a while.
Not only did they respond, but they sent her an entire box with four pairs of jeans that had pockets. They had designed them just for her.
As soon as we got back from our spring break, the box was there. I thought it was a birthday present.
At one point, the Today Show anchors tried to get the 10-year-old to use her gift to get other free things, but she wasn't having it.
Hey, Cameron, have you thought about, since this worked so well, writing maybe other companies of stuff that you really like, hoping that maybe they'll send you some free candy? No? Use your power for evil.
She's honest and persuasive. Little Cameron Gardner, who swayed the heart of a huge corporation with the power of her pen. Sarah Harnish, Family Life News.
How can you say no to that? So cute. And that is the world we live in this Thursday. Thanks for coming along. I'm Brennan Dixon, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.